there, welcome to SaaS Inbound Podcast. I'm your host, Anna Dana, Head of Growth at SaaS Group, serial acquirer buying wonderful SaaS businesses to take them to the next level. And here I chat with inspiring founders and experts to get an inside scoop on how they made their business a success. So today with me is Mustafa, CEO and founder at Atron.io, a digital advertising platform that helps brands, agencies, and publishers create, manage, and optimize mobile ads. Super exciting. Thanks. Welcome to the show.
Thank you for hosting. Thanks, Anna.
Sure, anytime. Well, I guess, you know, before we go into Atron and, you know, the product and the team and how you're growing it, let's start with the background, because you were kind of coming out from a fairly common, I think, story of a SaaS founder from an agency to SaaS.
Yeah.
So what is it?
Yeah, you know, the thing is, I was studying media informatics, you know, a lot of years ago. And I was always in between, you know, doing something creative because I'm just interested in beautiful things like arts and graphic design and all this kind of stuff. But at the end, I was studying media informatics to know more about the computers and how it works and just to learn a little bit, you know, code developing. And to be honest, I was a very bad developer. So that was the reason why I, you know, switched over to the project management in my first years, you know, I just... managing projects for, you know, it was like common doing mobile service providing, a premium SMS, you know, web download and all these things a lot of time before the iPhone came out. And yeah, I was doing this kind of business for some years, and I was always in between, you know, project management, code developing applications and all these kind of things. And yeah, later on, I just found my agency, BAM Interactive. This one was, you know, the main idea was just to help agencies and brands to get the mobile device into their communication campaign. And yeah, that was the beginning, you know, and therefore, you know, I did some years of agency struggling, I would say. So, you know, hiring people, you know, losing people and all this kind of business I was going through. And we did cool projects, you know, it was the year of 2010 onwards. So we were developing apps, we were helping agencies with strategy, we were generating QR codes, we were developing mobile landing pages and all these things to this time, so, you know, were common. And it was a good time. But, you know, then there was happening 2017, a very interesting thing. A good friend of mine came to me and said, hey, Mustafa, we are just, you know, developing an agency who is running mobile-only campaigns for several brands. And these campaigns were like display advertising campaigns, so doing cool, engaging, and interactive bannering to the mobile device and rolling out through Germany for several brands. And, you know, the main idea was good. We had some experience developing HTML5. And I said, okay, why not? Maybe it's a good shot. Let's go for it and do it, because they were not happy with the agency they were working with. And they had an issue because they were growing too fast. So we were talking about 1,000 campaigns a year, and I had to jump in or let it go. And then we made the decision. We just jump in and did our best with the front-end developers and graphic designers and consultants to get things happen.
All right. So what made you, well, I guess that made you go into SaaS.
That's it. That's it.
They were like, that's enough.
Yeah. You know, we had to do something. You know, there was too much work and less people. And to be honest, hiring people in a too short of time, you know, is not the best idea, because I would say you need time to grow, and you should try to be efficient as you can be. And yeah, the reason was, you know, to go into processes to keep quality high, to take care for the quality assurance. So, you know, we are talking about paid media. We are talking about media campaigns with a huge amount of money, and therefore creative is everything. So it has to run. It has to run programmatically, and there needs to be a common type of processing and getting things automated, and to not bore the front-end developers as well. You know, a good front-end developer, you know, which is, you know, for example, doing some back-end, jumping into front-end, so doing full stack, can be bought very easily when he has to, or she, for example, has to work on CSS files all the time. So, you know, you have to give them a little bit to play around and to get things automated and try to make you work as efficient as you can. And that was the beginning to jumping into more IT, into processing, into I would say the base of Etron today was built in these days.
What were the first steps that you took to try to move out of that agency grit into product?
You know, I would say we were growing into that because, you know, I was coming out from the projects. The next step was growing from the projects into the product because we were developing stuff that can be reused. So we were working on a modular base. You know, the ads that we were developing were kind of different, but at the same time, they were very near to each other. So the base was the same, but the functionality was different. So we developed a platform who has several modules who can be reused and who can be like refurbished every time, you know, so we have a one-time maintenance and can use this kind of module several times again. And that was the birth of the, I would say, product-based company and product-based approach that we had at BAM, at the agency. So still in this case, it was not a common agency anymore. It was like developed into the product. And therefore, you know, there was a good thing at the COVID time. All the campaigns were stopped. All the resources had, you know, a lot of air to breathe. So we had time. And that was the best time where I made the decision to talk with my managing director at BAM, and I was asking him if he, you know, has the resources, capabilities, and wants to make a next company together. So I was asking Ahmed to do the product owning and to develop a product out of the base that we had already, and you know, my vision sounds, you know, very easy. So we said, no problem, we will do just a front end on the base that we have already and then go for it. But, you know, that was my approach. But the real work was on the product development and on Ahmed's side.
Okay, that makes sense. Well, now, you know, as far as I understood from the website, what you guys are doing is it's a no-code approach, right? So you're kind of giving a bit more freedom to the creatives to take full ownership over their work and create the ads and then publish them and everything. And the target customer that you're working with is a bigger company or a bigger agency or an enterprise. And correct me if I'm wrong, but every time I think about that customer, thinking about giving a certain department or a certain part of that company a bit more freedom, I think about some rigid processes that are very hard to move because they've been working with, you know, somebody has an idea, another one is implementing it, and there is another one, you know, a developer, and it's a lot of steps. They just have to work with that process. And when you're coming with, you know what, let's eliminate all that. Let's have your creative do all of it, and it's going to be easier. Yeah. And I feel like there could be a bit of a friction when it comes to bigger companies. Correct me if I'm wrong, but I'm super curious how this process works for you.
Yeah, now we step into the next details. So, you know, there's an ideal customer profile that we have already. To be honest, you know, my favorite customer is the one who just changed the tool. So, you know, they say, okay, we have a tool like yours, we're using it, but, you know, I love you, UX, and you have a little bit more of functionality and maybe the pricing is the same. So why not? We will give it a shot. So this is the ideal customer. So no need to explain anything. No need to shift any process and no need to win a hero in that company who speaks for us and for the tool and for the new process. You know, but this is only one side of the story. I would say this kind of customer needs about, I would say, 4 weeks, 6 weeks to get onboarded and sign the contract and go for it for the next years. But there is the other side. You know, we have, let me jump a little bit to the first customers. You know, the idea was, I said, to Ahmed, hey, we can just, you know, talk with some of our customers. They have some cool staff. They have graphic designers there. They know about this kind of ads that they need. And they have some development in-house, but maybe we can try to help them keeping communication in line and make everything a little bit more efficient as it is. First, they were just, you know, writing a few sentences by mail, send a short briefing, and we just build the ad, send them over, and that's it. And then I said, what if they don't need to talk to us? They just, you know, take the tool, make whatever they want. We give them a short onboarding. And if there is some consultants necessary, we can help them out, maybe in peak times. So that was the beginning where we built this tool customer-centric. And my first customers, they were the most complex customers. They were the guys who were doing mobile advertising 10 years. So they know about functionality, they know about tech, and they know about the issues that can happen. And we built the tool with them. So we had the ideal customer for us from the base that we had at the agency. And we talked with them. We did the prototyping together. We talked about the UI and said, okay, what will help you changing the tool and coming to us? Because they were working with the competitors before, for sure. And again, with the agency as well. And with these customers, you know, they help us understand how the market is going and what is the weakness of other tools, what is the everyday struggling. And we build it around. And then I saw in the next step, so we come to the second type of customers, not the one who is in the game since 10 years, but the next one who is a big brand, who is interested in, okay, how does the mobile advertising run? Okay, I'm communicating with an agency who does the mobile advertising campaign for me, but what if they know it from the social media world? What if I have the staff in-house and I have two or three people running the programmatic campaign? So the only thing that I need is a cool creative, but the creative is, you know, it's not about only Photoshopping. It's not about maybe using a Google web designer. It's more about building something what is complex but can be done with a drag and drop tool. And that's the moment where I can, you know, tell them, okay, you can make your process a little bit more lean. You are able to in-house the power, the programmatical power, the power of in-housing, and the power of your everyday always on campaigns. You can manage them like you're managing your Instagram account, you know, running paid campaigns, but in the open web. And then it becomes to get hard because you have a lot of stakeholders you need to talk to. And I would say, from the beginning, you know, from the first steps into the final decision, it can take 3 months, you know, until you have everyone on board. And but once you have it and you are in, then everything runs smooth. And I would say the process is taking longer. It's hard to get everything on board, and because, you know, they need a lot of, you know, conversations and talks, and they make lists, and you need to negotiate about, you know, the pricing and all these kind of things. But on the other hand, once they're in, they're very, you know, easy to handle once you are in. And the other customer we had before is a little bit more, I would like to have this functionality, and I would like to prefer, you know, working this way, and what about new functionalities? So there is a different approach. So one is, you know, easy to onboard because he knows the tool, he knows the business, but he is digging a little bit deeper than the one who is very new to it and begins with the in-housing, and that's the brand, you know. And as this tool can be used drag and drop, you know, we are out of the business concerning CI and all those, these kind of things. These are in-housing topics they have to, you know, they have to take care of. And we are just, you know, giving the ad tech and giving some consultancy and giving some onboarding, and that's it.
So there is still a bit of consulting on top of the product.
Sure. Yeah. Yeah. That's it. So we have, you have like regular workshops, and we have a good customer support. So we are keeping in touch with the customer because they're running huge amounts of media money through their DSP, and we are on the creative building side are responsible that everything is running smooth. And the others, for example, you know, Everything can be measured. So you see the engagement, you see the VTR, you can see how many clicks are coming. And at the end of the day, you know, they are looking as well for return of invest. And they will take care of if something is converting and if the retargeting campaign is running or not. And at the end, you know, it is always the main question of the creative. And on the second side, you know, they can take care for the DSP and media strategy. Therefore, it's very important to keep in touch because, you know, they're running hundreds of millions impressions a month.
That's interesting. I'm always curious how SaaS founders come to a decision to introduce or keep certain services, because it doesn't, you know, from the point of the acquirer, for example, or an investor, it doesn't look the best. So yeah, I'm curious how it works, and you know, what makes you think that this is the bit that you cannot let go?
I would say you're able to let it go, but I would say it's a question of what kind of SaaS you're running. You know, we have a B2B business running, and we have companies, you know, who are leaving a lot of money a month at the tool, and for sure they always want to have someone to talk to, and because we are you know, digging into the business. It's not about, you know, using maybe, you know, I would say a tool like Canva and doing some nice ads, but they are spending money on the media side. It's a paid media, and therefore it's always good to have someone you can talk to, like a professional service. And for me, it's a chance, you know, because every time you can talk to the customer, you're able to sell something. So it's always about upselling and cross-selling and see what is possible. So you have the SaaS business, but as well, you can sell some agency business as well, additionally. So therefore, I would say, from my kind of perspective, this is a good way to keep them running.
Yeah, absolutely. Having a personal relationship when you're writing a bigger check, it's a must. I also wanted to ask you, because, you know, going on your website, there are some big names that are using Adtran. And another thing that I'm always curious about is, how do you get to the stakeholders, and how do you get to the person who actually could make a decision to use your product? So how does the sales process work for you?
You know, the thing is, we have a bootstrap company. So, you know, we are always looking for the most efficient way to win new customers. So, you know that we should invest more into the website. We know that we should more invest into the sales side. You know, these are all kind of things in the theory that are known by us. And we're doing business since a lot of years. So I know how to grow the company, but I can tell you, as it is bootstrapped, we just looking for the most efficient way to win new customers. So you're, you know, investing into the marketing side, and you can say, okay, I can do some Google Ad campaigns, and I can do some LinkedIn campaigns, and I can go to the panels and, you know, pay all these efforts. But it will take time that you see a revenue of your invest. You know, it can take 1 year, it can take 2 years, you know, that's a long-term thing. But first, you know, we have several steps we want to reach, and our approach is to do it step by step. So the first approach is, you know, getting into the certain revenue, and afterwards we can say, okay, we are still an efficient margin, and afterwards we can invest into these kind of things like going into the marketing and doing some sales automatism. So we are using, you were asking how to win the customers, you know, especially the big customers. The easiest way I'm using, you know, is just to get an introduction. So, you know, I have a big network at LinkedIn, and I'm just, you know, talking. I see who is connected to who, and I said, hey, man, do you know, maybe you can just help me out. There is a customer you seem to have a good relationship to. Maybe you can ask them if they're interested into programmatic in-house. Do they have a staff? Are they interested maybe saving some money and getting into more efficient way out from the walled garden into the open web? So maybe this is a way I can help them out. And this is the easiest way to get into this game. And on the other hand, you know, you can do a cold approach. So you can do the outreach and try to call and try to mail and try to get into the mood. But the easiest way, to be honest, is the networking way. And this is the way I want my customers until now. And this is the first thing, to get an introduction. And the other one is to ask the customers that you already have, maybe they can give you a recommendation. So this is my recommendation to all the founders, to see what your own network is doing. And for sure, it is always like, you know, to having a SaaS business who is growing by itself. You just, you know, do a little bit paid media and everything is running like in magic, you know. This is one thing everyone is dreaming about, but, you know, we have a different approach.
That would be so cool if it actually worked, but
yeah,
very few companies that have it that easy.
Yeah.
All right. Well, I also wanted to ask you, you know, because there are these big brands, and I assume that when you work with somebody that big, there are certain features that they want, that there are certain functionalities that they're asking for that are maybe not that relevant for the rest of your clients.
Yeah.
So how do you balance, you know, the specific requests of somebody who's paying a lot of money with your usual roadmap for the bigger crowd?
So we have a huge backlog. We have really a huge backlog, you know, we are working on. And I can tell you, you know, it's always about seeing about, you know, the priorities are changing, you know. A customer should be, you know, always priority number one. But to be honest, just from the business side, is always about the value, you know. So if we see that there is a big customer spending a lot of money and who is, you know, able to grow with just a single functionality which can be developed, you know, we are just jumping in. But I would say it's very important to every product and to every SaaS to keep an eye on the product itself. So you need always to have the same base. So it has to be a clean setup. It has to be clean code. Everything has to be documented very well. Everything has to run very stable and never build around company around one single customer. So this is the main thing you have to think about. But then the next thing is just, you know, it's the question of pricing. So I had already customers who told me, hey, Mustafa, we can only jump into Etron if you're able to develop this and that. And we said, okay, if this is if this is a good deal for us and you can sign a contract for about, I would say, 3 years, then we're into, why not? Yeah, we will take this in this month. So just sign the contract, pay the money, and we do what we can do. And if you are able to get this monitored and you have a good, you know, development staff and you have a good product management, then you're able to do that for sure. But it is not that the brands, as they're huge, they are always that deep in the topic. It's like the ICP we're talking about. I would say the customers before, who are doing this business since 10 years, these are the customers asking for new features. But the customers who are the big ones, the brands, you know, they are just giving out the money to the agency. The agency is doing the work. So this is how it usually works. And the brands that we have, even the big ones, they are coming through the agency. So the agency is building the ads in the platform. Or we do have the brands itself, like working in the DACH region, so in German, Switzerland and Austria. And they can be, I would say, handled very easily because they're in the normal times, or I would say in the everyday base, they are not that deep in the programmatic game. They are more, you know, investing money in social media and the walled gardens, because it was always easy to spend the money there. And programmatic and then housing was always a little bit like, oh man, there was a big tech stack, the big ad stack. Okay, it can be complicated. I don't see the value, so I want, you know, don't want to get into this game. But, you know, times are changing, and we are doing the best to help them in housing.
That's super interesting. Since you mentioned it, you know, the most of your customers are now in DACH region, so German speaking. And I guess that just comes kind of naturally, historically, maybe from your agency, from your
that's a reason,
network. But as far as I know, the second fastest growing market for you is Asia. And I was wondering, you know, how you're growing there and if you notice any difference between how Etron is being used in DACH region and now in Singapore and Southeast Asia.
This episode is sponsored by Rewardful. Looking for new ways to find customers for your SaaS business? Consider building an affiliate program. Rewardful is the easiest affiliate tracking platform to set up, manage, and scale for SaaS companies. building a successful affiliate program can be a little bit intimidating at first. And that's why Rewardful has taken what they've observed from their most successful customers' affiliate programs and distilled that into an exclusive online course. The exciting part? Their affiliate marketing course is absolutely free. Start the course at academy.rewardful.com. Academy.rewardful.com. And turn your biggest fans into your best marketers.
Yeah, that's a very interesting story. The thing is that, you know, we were just focusing here on the market because the market is big, you know, there is enough for us to do in this region. But, you know, in a very natural base, it's always like someone is knowing another one and they're talking about, okay, what can we do on the creative side? And maybe they see an ad and they see the link, they see that it's served by Etron because the delivery is just through our systems. And you always see if you have the link or a demo showing link, you see that it is done by this tool. And therefore, you know, the story was that someone was, for example, it's not only about Asia as well. We have in Europe fast-growing markets like Eastern Europe is coming. We have some customers in Poland. I see that the market is growing there as well. So the thing is that someone is showing an ad and they were talking about it and they see, okay, what kind of platform is this? And, I can't do it by my own. Then, you know, one thing comes to another. And the thing is growing in Poland and as well in Asia. And Asia was like a similar thing. We have a customer who is operating in Germany, but as well has a company in Asia. And they are running campaigns in Singapore and as well in Vietnam. We thought it would be, you know, just plug and play. So just, you know, doing the same way, try and get campaigns live here like it is in Asia. But we had to do a little bit in a technical fixing because we are doing the delivery globally and we have like service in every region. So you have the fastest loading times. And this is one of the key facts, you know, you need fast loading banner in the programmatic world, in-app and mobile web. Otherwise, you know, you're losing the customer and you're just, you know, paying the media, but you have no effort in it. So, and no value. And therefore, we had to do some fixing. So it was about keeping about, I would say, 2 to 3 weeks to get the campaigns running live in Asia. But then it was running and we see that it was very easy to onboard a graphic designer in Vietnam. Or in Singapore as well, we are doing like here, and everything is running remotely. So it is not a hard thing to run it on an international way. I would say, thanks to COVID, because this was one of the effects, you know, that were helping us changing the working mood.
So is that the goal for this year or upcoming year to expand globally?
You know, this is from the founder side, you know, I would say it's always to have a cool vision and to have a story telling everybody, hey, we're running globally and there's a ultra fast growing SaaS and everything, you know, what might be interesting for the investors. But from our side, I can say that, you know, we are focusing on the product itself. We are focusing on the customers that we have. And as long the money is coming, and the invoices are paid, you know, for me, it's not important from where they are. So if they are in Germany, it's quite for me as well, whether they're in Poland or in Eastern Europe itself, or maybe in Australia or in Asia. So for me, you know, it's not a big deal. So for us, it's good how it is. And as long as it's running and we are reaching the targets, you know, it has not to be, for example, Dubai. So Dubai was a thing that we were just, you know, trying to learn about the markets. So it's more about, I would say, a personal interest to see how the market is running and, okay, do they know about open internet? Or are they just knowing Instagram and Facebook and Meta and TikTok? Or is it something that we can help them, you know, to learn something new? So it's more about, you know, a personal interest, how the market is running, than if you can, you know, if there is a value, people using Etron, it's fine for me to do that, but there is no certain plan to go into a special market. So, you know, we just hitting the goals and see where it is on the planet.
All right. So it's a bit more of a sustainable approach.
Yeah.
Making sure that your customers are happy.
Yeah. Yeah. Wherever they are.
Wherever they are. Okay. Cool. I also wanted to ask you about AI, obviously. I mean, every conversation leads to it, right? And I think I saw it on LinkedIn on one of your posts or on the website, because your LinkedIn is in German now that I remember it. But it says that you're adding AI to your core functionality. So I'm curious what you're working on and, you know, how you're building on top. I think that's the bit that I really liked, how you're building on top of your core functionality. So you're not making AI change anything. You're just adding value with it. So what's that you're working on?
So first of all, thank you, you know, for being on the LinkedIn side, even though not all of my posts are in English. So thanks for being that interested. And I can tell you that for me, AI is more a vehicle, you know. It's a tool which helps us getting better results every day, you know. It's like using ChatGPT, you know. And I see a lot of these AI topics and AI badges, and, you know, everyone is like doing advertising with AI. But as I'm that deep, especially as well in the technical game and historically, you know, from my base, I can tell you it is always about value, always about value. So whether it is a tool, it is AI technology, it is a customer relationship, you know, it is about cross-selling, it's always about value. So as long AI can give my customers a value, that's fine. If it gives me a value to sell my tool better because of the AI badge, fair enough, you know, this is good to do. So first of all, you know, just to make a step before, I can tell you there are a lot of AI badges out there, and we tested a lot of tools because we have customers asking us. We have on the agency side as well customers who are letting us do some AI research for their needs and for their business models. So we are just monitoring tools and talking about founders of the tools and see if there is real value for our customers to onboard another tool. You know, we are not offering this on our side, on the agency side. So we are, you know, doing this agency job and helping the customers without, you know, developing an own tool and own software to sell them. So we have a very objective way to make the decision if this is a good idea or not. We are working on Atron features who can help the customers, doing better results, maybe doing some prediction on the results when developing such creative, and to help them getting out the most efficiency out of the media budget, out of the campaign. So I would say this is a real value. We have already AI implementation in other tools like Photoshop. So if you want to, you know, just work on Photoshop or use GenAI to make some images, they're fine for it. This is the first step. Afterwards, you just, you know, drag and drop into Atron. So from this part, there is no value where we can give to the customer. So GenAI is not a topic for us. But there is another thing about data collection, you know. So we have a lot of data stored. We see how the ads are used. We see the combination of vertical, a combination of a used SSP, or I would say used publisher, so in-app, mobile web, desktop web. We see if there is an engagement from the customer side on a certain module, on a certain ad type, and we see that there are there are cross effects in between all these different topics. And therefore, AI can help us doing some predictions and give them learnings from the past. But I would say this is more machine learning than AI. So therefore, I'm a little bit, you know, I'm not that offensive in this topic. Really, AI is for me everything. Well, what is like ChatGPT, or you see the big companies doing AI, and we would just rather use an API of the big ones and try to give value than developing something by our own, because it doesn't make any sense, you know. We want to generate value and we want to get something back from the customer, and if this running is totally fine, and otherwise we won't give it a touch. But on the other side, it's on always about product development. So that's the reason why we dig into this topic. But it's always have to be a link between giving value and making everyday work a little bit easier. And then the things are growing and the things are working. But it's not about selling a product or trying to tell a story so, investors get curious to know more about us. So this is not the approach.
Okay, that's fascinating. I think that's one of the very few answers like this when, AI is not going to be the core, or it's not even going to change much. And we would rather, just give people an opportunity to use ChatGPT to generate something and then go back and use us for.
There has to be a regular way and everyday way without any efforts to use a tool. Yeah. Then, that's the reason why the people or my customers are changing from tools they're using for 10, 15 years to Etron, because there is a value. It's easier for them to get a common result where the result can be sold or can be used in the campaign. And therefore, it makes sense to give it a change. And then we talk about changing the behavior. ChatGPT is successful because it makes totally sense. There are tons of tools I can show you. I was just using, registering and see what kind of result is this. Even, I know how to engineer a prompt. And I can tell you, you can lose a lot of waste your money and waste your time in AI. But as well, there are only few things that really make sense. And there will be a lot of changes in the future. And I know that it's just changing the agency world. And I know it will change behavior. So fair enough. But from my point of sight, I'm rather, going to be a fast follower and going to keep really revenue than just telling a story on LinkedIn. It's fair enough to do that, but we don't have the capacity, we don't have the time, and we don't have interest in doing this. So that's the reason how to, how we are behaving like we do. And so this is the AI topic. And as we're using our testing tools and see how they're running and trying to monitor for our customers on the agency side, we are in this business. And, there is a vision of Mark Zuckerberg. It totally makes sense. He says, okay, just plug into your wallet to Meta, and the rest is done on our side. So now I get a creative heart as well. Now I see, sure, it's about data, sure, about revenue, sure, it is about results. I'm a big fan of that. But the obvious side, we are talking about creativity. We're not talking about, make people buy a thing that they don't need. We want to make the people happy to buy something, because it's like a big customer journey. It's a big journey, It's about developing a creative, test the creative, see if it's running, and make it beautiful, and make it blinky, and make it cool, and make it shine. And to see emotion on the other side is more important than only the results. So in this topic, I'm in between the both sides, and I say, okay, efficiency is good, but don't lose creativity and don't lose humanity in this story.
That's pretty cool. All right. Well, thanks for sharing the mindset about this. I also wanted to ask you, because you've already mentioned that another bit that you're offering to your customers is analytics, and you are in Europe, obviously, right? So GDPR is a big thing.
Yeah, it is.
So I'm wondering how you balance the privacy with the need for some sophisticated analytics in ads. But also, I wanted to ask how you integrate or maybe complement the other existing analytic tools.
We are on the comfortable side of this story, because we're just building the creative. We are tracking anonymously, so we don't know who is using this kind of ad, but we know that there is an ID who is using this kind of ad. So as long in Europe you are not able to to see through the tracking who in person is using this ad, you are free to go. So that's the good side of the story that we are sitting in or we are playing every day, because we are on the creative side. On the other side, if it's going to the SSP and it's going to the DSP side and you're on the publisher side, there are the rocks which have to be moved, and therefore they take care of all this GDPR stuff, and they have the whitelisting, and they have the cookies and all these kind of topics which are important for the GDPR, and therefore it's to make it short, it's easy for us because we are on the creative side and we are just tracking the data, but we don't know who is owning this data.
And what about supporting other analytics tools?
Yeah. So as you as a customer, you're free to implement your custom code into our ad tech. It's running like you're building the creative. You're just pushing a button. Therefore, there comes out an ad script, which is doing the connection between our serving and the DSP side. So you take the script and then you are free to edit the script. So you can implement additionally your own tracking, so whatever you're using, you just implement it and then you run it in your DSP. So at this side, just from the contract side, we are out. So if you want to implement some not GDPR compliant stuff, you're free to go, because I don't know about these kind of things. I'm just giving out the ad script and that's it. It's not running on our machines. So therefore, we are very flexible to for the usage. So as long as it is outside from the GDPR countries, then they can use it however they want. And if they are into this this Europe region, then for sure they have to take care for the GDPR. And most of them are using tracking tools like from Google or from other DSPs and supply sides, and they are free to go. So they can use it however they want. So we are flexible in this kind of topic.
All right, I see. Okay, well, I just have a couple more questions. They're the usuals here, right? And you went through all the entire journey from agency to now SaaS. What do you think has been the biggest win and the biggest failure? Or, let's maybe not frame it as a failure, but a learning.
So I would say the biggest failure was maybe to start the platform with a big vision, but without being deep enough on the execution side. So it's always about keeping the balance between vision and execution, because when we built the platform, we had to do it twice, because before COVID time, we are just doing some MVP and we're just playing around and said, okay, this is something we can build on or work on. But then in COVID time, Ahmed stepped in and said, okay, as a product owner and the one who is, responsible for the UI, I can tell you that there is a big work and a lot of work for refurbishing and restructuring the architecture of the platform. And then we just, began with working on AWS and doing a beautiful new UI and trying to refurbish modules. So I would say it could have been more efficient in this kind of perspective, but there was not a big failure. There were other businesses failing before, before Etron, I would say. So there were some learnings before. But in this story, it was fine. It was running like it is. And the biggest win was to get to have a good team, to have good developers, and to have a good mix-up of developers. So you have full stack, you have back-end developers, you have front-end developers. And it's a big win to have the availability to source worldwide. So we have developers sitting in Poland, we have developers sitting in the Ukraine, and we have developers sitting in Germany. So therefore, we are only looking for the competence and for the best ones to get the jobs done than rather where they are based. So I would say this is a big win and a good mix up to have a good project management and a good mindset and a good mood in the team. So this is the biggest win. I would say it's always about the people, so you get the best product out there.
Absolutely. How big is the team?
Oh, it's not big. It's a rather small team. I would say, let me check, we are working with about 5 to 6 developers in the team. We have one product owner, we have one QA engineer, and all of us are trying to get an everyday support, the customers happy. But you know, we are very glad and happy that we have a good onboarding process, we have a good documentation, we have cool videos. The platform is easy to handle, so you get good results of the first onboarding, and we don't have a lot of returning questions, and we don't have a lot of Slack support, so we can manage this by this small team. Yeah, and as well, we have on the agency side people who can support on the graphical side. So if there is a necessary topic, like my customer is in vacation and they don't have graphical resources left, so they can ask the agency for upselling and doing some creative work as well, so we can jump into the account and help them out. So this is something we can do as an additional work, and that makes us so efficient and lean on this side.
Yeah, a Swiss army knife. That's pretty cool. All right, so the last question is about a hack, and it can be your personal hack, how you're managing the company, or something that works for the product, for the growth, for the team, anything that could be valuable for other founders.
My biggest win in this founder story was because that was not my first thing. I was founding. I found things sort of failing before the agency, but the biggest win was to learn about yourself. I would say it's about self growth, and you have to know about your weakness. You have to know about your strength in the realistic way. And when you know this, it's about the people, to have the perfect people and the perfect skills, the perfect place. And then you can make everything happy. And even if you are small, you can just, get out competitors who have, 150 FTEs running. So this is possible if you have the right people in the right place, and you know about your own weakness, about your own strength, and everyone can play his role. And that was the best win and the best thing that I can tell every customer, every founder who is interested in learning a little bit. So self-growth and giving something back and to play the game with the right people.
That's amazing. Yeah, some self-reflection, I think, is very important to understand who's missing, what piece is missing.
Yeah, it is.
To compliment you. Amazing. All right. Well, thank you so much for sharing this and the story. It's super, super interesting. Honestly, it took me some time to get through the website and to understand completely what you guys are doing.
It's very special. Yeah, it's a niche. You're right.
Yeah, but it's really fascinating that you found it, and you seem to be thriving in it. So
appreciate it.
I'm excited to see what you're going to do with AI, and maybe do it again sometime.
Yeah, it was fun. Thanks a lot for your time. Thanks for hosting me, and thanks for this hour. The time was flying. So thanks a lot.
Thank you. Anytime, and take care.
That was yet another awesome conversation on SaaS Unbound. We're always looking for new guests to share their experiences. We mostly talk with bootstrapped SaaS founders, and if you're one, reach out to me directly at anna@saas.group or find me on LinkedIn. If you're not bootstrapped or even not SaaS but have a great story to tell, we want to hear from you too. And obviously, SaaS Unbound wouldn't be possible without the SaaS Group, a founder-friendly private equity company that buys awesome businesses that people love to take them to even greater success. If you're thinking about selling your company or just exploring your options, feel free to visit saas.group, fill in the form, and expect a response in under 24 hours.